You're listening to Become Family, a podcast aimed at restoring confidence in marriage and family life. And welcome back to another episode of our podcast. This is episode 101. The podcast name is now To Become Family, but this is still episode 101 because I don't want to start backwards from one.
No.
So this is episode 101 of the To Become Family podcast, and we are your hosts, Renzo and Monica Family. Just kidding.
You guys get it?
Not funny. Okay.
Try again.
No. I got her. So we're Renzo Monica Ortega, and we are your hosts of your new favorite Catholic family podcast, marriage podcast, marriage and family podcast.
Who are we? What are we? I don't know anymore.
No, but
just kidding.
But we're here. And so Monica has no idea what we're talking about today.
As usual.
No, not as usual. Usually I have some idea. But I think I'm just jumping right into the topic. So a couple episodes ago, we had the one of the sex episodes. Oh,
I've mostly been about that lately.
No, we talked about not the last one, but we had the I need to shave. We had the episode on do husbands want to have sex all the time? Right,
oh, yeah, and that the was response like one.
Yeah, well, it was a
reacting response. Okay,
to the Catholic gentleman. And we had some interactions with some listeners on Instagram that just prompted me to do like a deeper dive into like what is the why are we not seeing eye to eye with it? And so I ended up listening to one of the listeners that responded his podcast he had, and it was really interesting, and it really made me think. One of the things they were discussing on their podcast was whether or not it was permissible for a couple who is practicing NFP and abstaining, like can that couple, since they can't have intercourse and because they don't have a baby during certain parts of NFP or the woman's cycle, and they were debating whether or not like is it okay to do other things in their marriage. Mm. And they're both Catholic. They sound very faithful. And they were saying like in the catechism, there's not like explicit like forbiddance of certain things that could be done outside of intercourse. And it was very fascinating to me to hear that because I tend to be in an echo chamber as much as I don't want to be. Like I can go out and like listen to counter examples of certain things that I might believe, but like I usually ends up being from like atheists or agnostics or like other faiths, but like rarely do I get to interact with people who are faithfully Catholic, but maybe don't know certain things. Mm. Right. Like most of the people that I interact with that I know are Catholic, like they tend to be at least somewhat educated in most of what the church teaches. Or maybe that's just an assumption I'm making. Do you have any sense of any of that?
Well, I think I distinctly remember a conversation with a friend of mine, several years ago. Because she saw something online, and kind of like a conversation back and forth between a couple different Catholic women talking about this topic, and she came to me like privately and was like, "I'm reading this, and they're saying that there were certain behaviors that are not okay unless it finishes in the full act of sex." And I was like, "Yeah," and she's like, "I didn't know that, like." Mm. What do we do now? What does that mean for my marriage? Do I need to go to confession? Like, and she was very like flabbergasted and at first didn't understand why. Kind of kept following the conversation and was like, okay, so now I'm convicted by this, but also like, why didn't I know this mm-hmm. sooner?
Yeah.
So I think that it's, I don't want to say a common misconception, but I think that there's a lot that people don't know.
Well, so that's what I want to kind of talk about. I'm going to need your help though in a couple of things. Like I might end up just either I will like go too far in nerd out, or I will like hold back and not make full points.
Okay.
And you just need to be like,
you didn't make sense.
Yes. Or even just making sure like you can like bring it back to like things people will care about. But I think it's really important because I think from what this listener was like, from what this listener was saying, and then also from like your experience with a friend who, there might be a lot more listeners or even just Catholics in general that want to faithfully follow the church, but like don't know, like their foundation is just very, is not as firm on, I don't know how to say it without sounding like condescending. Like I'm not trying to be condescending, but like they don't have a good, they haven't been formed well enough, and not even like formed in like, well, do you know what the church teaches, but more of like, do you know how to use your intellect to reason what the church might say in certain situations? Because I think a lot of people look at the catechism, for example, or anything that the church, like any question they might have about like what's allowable in marriage or even just allowable in general as like a person, and be like, well, is it in the catechism? Has the church officially declared it? And they expect the church to be like a dictionary where like they can look up this certain act, like it could be anything, like punching a baby. Does the Bible say you can't punch babies? Does the catechism say you can't punch babies? Which pope said you can't punch babies? None of them. None of them have ever said explicitly you can't punch a baby, but that doesn't mean that we can punch babies.
Yes.
And like I think there's that thinking of like, well, if the church teaches it, like where, show me where. And then we've seen that in forums. We've seen it everywhere.
For sure. They want like a concrete answer, I think, when they have questions. And then also when there's a certain behavior that like feels good. And I don't mean just like in the pleasure realm, because no. I know I know that's what we're talking about, but even just like a behavior that like it makes me feel better, and it makes it seems like our relationship is stronger because we do this thing. And that, I mean, this could be in the sexual realm or anything, but like, well, when we do this together, like we just feel closer and we feel more bonded. I feel more confident. I feel stronger. I like what could possibly be wrong about it? And there's nothing that says that this is wrong or right. And so I think it's also just like a human tendency to just like sometimes I just want the clear answer. Like, can somebody please just tell me, like there's times in oh my gosh, there's so many times in parenting where you're like, where's the manual here? Like, where's the directions?
Because it's Manuel. Sorry. Keep going.
It's unnecessary.
You said his name wrong.
This is unhelpful. Want me to tell you when you're being unhelpful? This is unhelpful. Keep going.
What's great is that this is not for the camera at all. Or for the audience. This is what you live with.
All the time.
You were looking for the manual.
Now all I can hear is Thomas singing, "Oh Come, O Come, Emmanuel." Okay, this does happen in real life, though. Like, I'll be disciplining the kids and he'll make a joke. And that wasn't in the manual.
I'm sorry.
But yeah, like there's so often though that we just want, you're in a tough situation and you're just like, I just want somebody to tell me what to do. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes when it comes to parenting, when it comes to relationships, when it comes to friendships, and then in marriage, you're like, this feels so important. Why aren't there like guidelines for everything? And it's because it's a relationship. So like,
well, see, this is where I think the argument of poor formation is important, because and this is where I'm going to start. I think there is a solution to this, and I think for a lot of listeners who
have something on your eyelash,
do it where I'm concerned. Which one?
This one. I think you got it.
I have multiple eyelashes.
I don't see the thing on your eyelash.
Good.
Anymore.
So I think a big problem. I think this is not the this is not rare for people. Just even like, how do I pray? Like, I think all aspects of like, yes, how I live my Catholic faith, yeah, and even like we call it human formation, but like, all aspects of how like the human and spiritual integrate, yeah, and interact, like
the whole human.
Right.
Yeah.
I think is in question, because I think we unfortunately have not learned well, how to think as a Catholic thinks. Mm-hmm. Because there's a specific way.
It's like taking critical thinking and applying it to, mm-hmm, spiritual thinking.
Well, I don't know about, so like you as a math teacher, like when your kids were to ask you like, where am I ever going to use this? Mm-hmm. Like you'd be like, well, you could apply this type of logic to multiple types of situations.
Sure.
And I think the Catholics should have a grasp on logic, and we don't, because most of us, because like our first experience with Catholicism was either in Catholic school when we were just like regurgitating facts about the church and sacraments, blah, blah, blah. And then maybe we had a great encounter with the risen Lord, and we're like, oh, our lives are changed. And then like we dive really deep into spirituality and like forms of prayer and how to integrate, how to heal, how to do all these things. But I still think that for a lot of us that have done that, we miss the, like there's a part of like Christian thought that is grounded in like reason, mm-hmm, and being able to like to reason through things as a Catholic well, so that you can know how to live. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a separation there between like the spiritual aspect of like, so like you could have a lot of faithful Catholics who are very, very faithful, who then you say to them, like we did in that episode, like, hey, like your sexuality doesn't have to be like a cross that you bear all the time, but like you could actually be free from that, and that our theology supports that. And then they could throw back, well, where is that in the catechism? And you're like, well, it's there if you can reason, but I can't just point it to you, because like it's not explicit.
It doesn't have like a number.
No, paragraph. It's not explicit. Like it's, you have to really know your theology, but first you have to be willing, like, or able to think through it. And I think that's not sexy. Like the idea of like, okay, do you want to be able to think like Aquinas? Like, no one does. Like they want to pray like St. Teresa of Avila. Like they, and I think like we want to be able to ascend beyond reason. Mm. But like a lot of us don't use reason as a ladder to get there. It's kind of like, I just want to get past this. I don't want to think about like the reasons for the existence of God, or like how I know like a soul exists or the angels. I don't care. I just want to ascend to be one with the creator of the universe, which is great. And like some of us can do that, but then those of us that can't are living day-to-day lives and don't know how to like think through like, well, is it permissible to yell at my kid when he's going to stick his finger in a electrical socket? Mm. Right? Like there's like, you, yeah, still have to live in the world. So like you and have to be able to do that.
And then like in situations like that, then we turn to kind of like the secular, like gentle parenting, attachment parenting, mm-hmm, authoritarian parenting. And we try to like find a school, mm-hmm, that kind of matches our desires, and we're like, here, they give me the rules, like they tell me what to do in these situations, right. So
and like the church obviously doesn't care, because they haven't authoritatively said
this is how a Catholic parents, mm-hmm, like, yeah, that's interesting.
So what we're gonna do is something that I find very helpful, is read through encyclicals. And I want to just point out a couple paragraphs, and I'm excited to do this with you. This is like a book study, but it's in Old English. So this is from an encyclical by Pope Leo the 13th, which on the restoration of Christian philosophy. So this was the first encyclical I had to read in my master's program, because the university that I did my master's in is very Thomistic. So they're very focused on Thomas Aquinas, and they build out from there. And they are very big on returning to like this reasoned thought, so that we can then learn everything we have to know about our theology. So I think this line is very, this line was very telling, that I was like, oh, this is exactly what I want to talk about. So this is the second paragraph. Can you please read it? Cause you are a better reader than me.
Okay. Whoso turns his attention to the bitter strifes of these days and seeks a reason for the troubles that vex public and private life must come to the conclusion that a fruitful cause of the evils which now afflict, as well as those which threaten us, lies in this: that false conclusions concerning divine and human things, which originated in the schools of philosophy, have now crept into all the orders of the state and have been accepted by the common consent of the masses.
And to me, that is so powerful. And when you think of the state of marriages and just, you know, whatever with you believe in politics, but like when you look at where the world's at right now, a lot of it can be traced back to people believing certain philosophies that are counter to what we believe as Christians, and then being able to push those ways of thinking to the point that you get to where we are right now. Mm-hmm. And like it happened over time, and it happened really slowly.
And subtly. Like yeah, it subtly. Wasn't like they came out claiming like I'm teaching heresy. Like
right.
Didn't have the
some
label.
Of them did, but some of them were just like, let's just make a slight change to this thing. Like, why can't we word it this way? Some of them just came out with whole new schools of thought that were just like, no, Thomism is like whatever he believes is dumb. And like my point in pointing this out is that like it's crept into a lot of Catholic marriages because you don't realize it, but like if you believe like so this is one way is like if you believe that emotions that like the truth. Everybody has their own truth. So that's something that I think is very popular is like truth is whatever you believe. Mm-hmm. You can have your truth. I can have my truth. Mm-hmm. If you believe that, that means that like in your marriage, if your one spouse believes one thing and the other believes another about sex, for example, then you're like, you can never have a consensus because you're like, well, you can't tell me my truth is wrong. Mm-hmm. And then that's why you end up looking, well, like, well, what does the church teach exactly? And you're like, well, we'll just both believe with that. And like, you don't realize that you're subtly like create, yeah. Like you can both be like, well, the Lord has told me this.
Yeah.
But like without realizing, well, the Lord will never speak anything contrary to what the church has already revealed. And it'll never speak contrary to what you can, what reason tells you because he can't, like the Lord won't contradict himself. But like if you can't reason through things, like you're just going to come up with whatever you think is right that makes, mm-hmm. that's like fills your needs. Mm-hmm. Am I making sense?
Yeah. The first thing that I thought, it's a slight, like, takes a left turn from what you were just saying.
Left turn.
I watched a reel of at the March for Life. Someone was interviewing some of the pro-choice protesters. Mm-hmm. And they were asking them, was this quote from...
Oh, yeah. I saw that.
Adolf Hitler, Joseph Stalin, Donald Trump, or Margaret Sanger?
Yeah.
And... all of the quotes are from Margaret Sanger, who founded Planned Parenthood. And it's just, it's amazing how, like, yes, you can be in this, like, school of thought in this pro-choice arena. You know, often that's a more liberal way of thinking. And so, therefore, things like racism are very important. Like, battling racism is important. And not that it's not to everybody. Anyways, that's a sticking point. And for them, they could not like believe that Margaret Sanger said mm-hmm. some of these things about like eugenics and mm-hmm. eliminating a race because they want to believe so strongly that Planned Parenthood is for the good of women and for low income mm-hmm. families and for, you know, minorities and things like that to give them the opportunity to better themselves. So I think that's what I first thought of when I read that quote was just how like we can have this thing that we really believe and we try to align our life's decisions with that and we try to like support that. And have we taken the time to really check? Mm-hmm. And reason through, like, is this reasonable? And is it good? And mm-hmm. is it holy? You know, like, have we really, like, done that deep work? And, like, where did we come to this conclusion? Where did mm-hmm. we come to this decision? Where did it come from? Was it from ourselves? Was it from what we've been ingesting from the media and our community? Is it from the church herself? Mm-hmm. You know, is it from the Lord? All that.
Well, and now more than... I hate when we say things like now more than ever. Like it's very hyperbolic, but
you never
I
speak like that.
Well, So I do think, though, I do think now more than ever, we are getting more information. Yes. So like even that we don't even realize that like we're retaining. So like it's affecting our thinking. Sorry, like if we're not doing that deep work, like you said. So like one of the things that Pope Leo recommends here, though, is that what we need to do is return to Christian philosophy. And this is what this, let's see, up to right here, if you could read up to here, I think this is really important because, again, talking about philosophy isn't sexy. It doesn't like.
I like it when you do it.
That's a lie. That's a puts lie. Me to sleep. Big, big lie. But I think, again, if you, this is again hyperbolic, but like if you want to have a good marriage and if you want to be able to reason through like even just relationships and how you interact with others and live out your faith in that, I think it's important to have the ability to think in a Christian way and know that you're thinking in a Christian way and not the way that the world is teaching you to think. So this is one thing that Pope Leo says in the fourth paragraph.
In the first place, philosophy, if rightly made use of by the wise, in a certain way tends to smooth and fortify the road to true faith and to prepare the souls of its disciples for the fit reception of revelation, for which reason it is well called. So
they can see this.
I know this. I hate that we're on YouTube. Okay. For which reason it is well called by ancient writers sometimes a stepping stone to the Christian faith.
Okay. That to me is so important. That
tell me why.
Because so philosophy.
I had a hard time reading.
But like philosophy is, I don't think it's going to be something that like, that it's not going to convert people to Christ. People who like are trying to live Christian marriages may not feel like it's going to help me grow spiritually. But like it's supposed to be something that's kind of like a prerequisite for faith.
Okay.
Like a prerequisite for a Christian faith. So to smooth, like he says, to smooth out and fortify the road to true faith, to prepare souls for the reception of revelation, and then to be a stepping stone to the Christian faith. So for a lot of what I think is happening now, because a lot of the people who teach and maybe are in certain positions where they're evangelizing may not have good philosophy. Mm-hmm. Right, they're converting people, and like people are going to talks, people are going to conferences, people are experiencing God, and He's very present to them. But then, because they don't know, they don't have a good philosophy, like their road isn't fortified, they then deconstruct, and like that's where you get a ton of people who are deconstructing all the Christian faiths and just saying like they're just taking the bits and pieces that fit for them, and they're just ending up with whole new religions, right? And I think it's because they don't have the prerequisite of like, this is how you're supposed to think as a Christian.
Mm. And it's interesting because you see that happening in Catholicism too, and they're not calling themselves different faiths. Like they're not calling themselves Protestant. They're not calling themselves a different Christian sect because they still believe Jesus in the Eucharist. They still believe in the infallibility of the Pope. So they still maintain that title of Catholic, but somewhere within their framework, they've created or believed something that isn't quite aligned with the entirety of Catholicism.
And this is important to note. Like, I think I'm gonna put something in the title of like relating to sex. Like, this will relate eventually to what we talked about like husbands desiring sex all the time. But like, this is so important to lay the foundation. Like this, it lays the foundation for it because like the redemption that Christ offers doesn't make sense unless you understand like what you're actually being called to live.
Yes.
Because like it's, and I forgot.
And also that like, that you're attached to things that you need to be redeemed for. Like you need to be bought back and you're
right.
Because I think that there's a lot of like, there's a lot of like, these things don't, like they're not hurting me,
right?
And it's like, no, you have to acknowledge that there's like, we need a redeemer and a savior.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a very lived reality.
And not just like a celestial therapist, right?
Yes.
Like you don't need a cosmic being who's there to comfort you when you're sad. And I think, like, I forgot who said it, but I don't know if it was a priest friend of ours, but like someone said, like, you don't realize how hard it is to be good until you try. Mm-hmm. Like I think I kind of pointed that out when we were talking about husbands desiring sex all the time, like mm-hmm. that, and then saying like, that's not how it ought to be. It kind of seemed like an attack for guys. Like, well, this is my experience. I'm like, yeah, that's true. That's the baseline. Absolutely. Of like, this right. is where you're at.
Right.
But again, in order to get there, first you have to know how to think as a Christian and not see challenges like that as like you're being.
It's not meant to be like a shaming statement right. either, that like, yes, that is your lived reality mm-hmm. right now. Mm-hmm. And that's not the goal. That's not the perfection of your sexuality. And like, you're invited to be part of that healing process here on earth.
Mm-hmm. And so what was said was like, well, guys can do like, can men and can spouses do other things? And I think this would go for any type of desire that we might have. Like, can we do other things in our marriages, or can we do other things that like, if I feel bad about, you know, I got, you know, telling white lies, I can't think of anything else outside of like the sex example at the moment. So if you can fill a different example, So what Pope Leo says is that like this, the need to return philosophy is best done by returning to St. Thomas Aquinas. So he pushes there. He does mention St. Bonaventure as well as being like another person to seek for different reasons. But see, the whole rest of the encyclical is basically just saying like, return to Aquinas, return to his thinking. And the only thing I want to talk about in terms of like how we can know what the church would teach or like what's right or wrong is through another encyclical called Veritatis Splendor, which is by St. John Paul II. So it's just about knowing truth. And basically it's a very long document. I'm not going to talk about all of it or any of it, honestly. Like, you just read through the document, but basically you can know, and I would love to explain this better in the different Facebook groups that we're in, when people ask all the time, like, can we do this? Can we do this? Can we do this? And like, the church hasn't said anything, but like, you know, through your reason, whether something is objectively good or evil. If it's not objectively good or objectively evil, you can then look at the circumstance.
So that it's neutral.
I'd have to think of an example, but you can know a thing. So like, for examples, like we'll use the example of can couples do things outside of, can, like, if they can't have sex, can they do other things? Mm-hmm. So like, you look at if oral sex is the thought, like, can they have oral sex? So like, you look at something like oral sex and you judge it by three different things, like it, objective, good or evil. What are the other two? Circumstances. Intent is the next one, and then circumstances. Mm-hmm. And most people judge whether or not something is good or evil by the intent.
Yep.
Right. So like, they'll be like, well, I want to be with my husband and he wants to be with me, but we can't because we're gonna have a baby. So,
and it's intimate and it's bonding.
Right. I'm not using them. I'm not lusting. I want to be with them. And like, this is a good thing. So by their intention, they're like, oh, this must be a good. But that's not how, again, that's not how Christians should think. Like, there's a way that Christians think. There's something that you can go back to Aquinas for. And this is why like, this matters for your life in your relationship. So like, first is objective. Like, objectively, is oral sex good or evil? And we can then look at something else called the law of human nature. No, not the law of human nature. I'm going to forget this. Natural law. Sorry, there it is. So like, you could look at natural law.
Right.
And that's something that's specifically Catholic, to go back to natural law. Like, Christians, Protestants don't have that vocabulary. They're starting to get it because that's the only way to really counteract what's happening in the culture.
It also, like, natural law is
that's
the way things were created to be by nature.
Right.
So, like, it's the way things are supposed to work.
Yes. And I get nervous about making it too simplistic of like, well, these parts only work for these things, which is true. Like, that's what it's for. But it's also like if you look at the creation of a thing and like, what is it used for? And you could then deduce like the things that you could do with it and the things you can't do with it. So like, yes, but I just wanted people to be like, you're just saying that.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
I guess it's just like, why is it that Catholics are the only one that have noticed natural law?
To speak
of it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like, no, and that's, no, you're right. So like, I've, the example I've used with our youth group teens when they've asked about like, what can you do with, why can't you do these things? I use the example of a chair mm-hmm. and I've said like, when like a chair was created, it was created to be a chair. You can use it as a table. Like you can use it as a weapon. You can use it for other things, but it was created to be a chair. Mm-hmm. And so like you ought to use it as a chair. So the same reason, like you're like our organs were created to consummate in a certain way. Mm-hmm. You can do other things, but like that's not their end. That's not mm-hmm. their, that's not why they were created that way. So to use them in other ways can be, is seen as disordered mm-hmm. from what they were created to be used for. So like objectively, you could say that that's evil to do those things. I think evil sounds harsh to people, mm-hmm. but that's again, like that's where, if you go back to our philosophical roots as Catholics, like that's what we believe. Mm-hmm. So like intention is a secondary thing. Mm-hmm. So again, punching a baby is objectively evil. Like you can't punch a baby. Mm-hmm. Babies were meant to be kissed, not punched. Like that's so like, but punching a person, objectively, that's not neutral. That's like, okay, that's not good or evil. I guess you could call it neutral. But like, then you can go like your intent. What's your intent of punching someone? Well, they're attacking me. Or no, sorry. Intent is like, I want to hurt them.
Yes.
Okay. So what's the circumstances? They're attacking me and I'm defending right. myself. Okay. That's moral.
That is moral. Right.
Right. So mm-hmm. like you could trace back. So like anything in your marriage, you don't need the church to definitively say something. You could reason through the things. And if you can't, or if something is like ambiguous, sometimes like you should be able to ask a priest, but unfortunately a lot of priests don't have that philosophical background anymore. So like a lot of them don't either know or don't care. Mm-hmm. And they kind of just go by like, well, what's best for your marriage? But like, no, there's things that are right or wrong. Mm-hmm. Okay. Sorry. So that's what I wanted to say for that. Anything?
Yeah. So that's, and that is summarized by St. Thomas Aquinas, right?
That's summarized better. It's in the catechism. So like you can find the catechism, but it's also talked about in Veritate Splendor. In a lot of it has like that has its foundations on Aquinas because he uses a lot of Aristotle, who uses a lot of like the like how you know things are like mm-hmm. objectively good or evil. Like you have to reason through that to understand it.
And that then, was step number one, objective.
Yes.
Like object. So objectively yes. good or evil. The second one is intent and then circumstance.
Yes.
Sorry. I just wanted it to summarize in one. I was trying to wrap up what you're saying.
Sorry. So like, so from there, we can then jump to theology of the body because like if a husband, if we're going to go back to the guy who's on a work trip for 2 weeks, mm-hmm. okay. And he's desiring sex with his wife. It's not objectively wrong for him to desire sex with his wife. And then you can look at the intent. Like he just like, and then that's when you can look at intent. Like, does he just want to be with his wife mm-hmm. or is he just desiring sex? Because mm-hmm. if he's just desiring sex, that is evil. Mm-hmm.
So it's really important for you to be honest with yourself yes. about your intent. Yes. Cause you could also think of like, I know what the right answer is supposed to be. Mm-hmm. And if I say this or like, mm-hmm. I mean, it's not true that I want to be with my wife, but like at that moment, like what is the
right.
intent.
Right.
Yeah.
And sorry. And I want to say evil, what I mean by evil is a deprivation of the good. So like where God isn't, where there is no good, we just call it evil. You can call it bad. You can call it wrong. I use the word evil because that's like what the term is. Mm-hmm. But anytime that anything is depriving good, like that's evil. So like if the intention is I just want to have sex, I just want to have a release, that's wrong. Mm-hmm. And like that shouldn't be, that's not allowed when you're in marriage. That's not good for your marriage. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I think a lot of guys, they, like you said, like they'll either rationalize through the intent mm-hmm. Or they'll let the circumstance of like, well, it's been 2 weeks and I just, you know, I'm a man and I have these biological needs. But like the problem with that is that like you're called to more than that.
And this isn't to like the point of us having this conversation is not to shame a spouse or mm-mm. people in their marriage that are couples that have been living this way or have been like having these experiences, but it's to call up mm-hmm. because like there is a greater good.
Yeah.
And that like this idea of redemption and salvation and freedom. Yeah. Like in that heavy moment sounds like a pipe dream. Like, mm-hmm. that's impossible. That's only in heaven. And I hope I get there. And like, that's what, you know, that's why I do the things that I do to try to get there. But like, no, that can be a lived reality. In like, that's, we're invited to that.
Mm-hmm. Well, and this is like what I said, like, you don't realize how hard it is to be good until you try. So most men, if they're living with this reality of like, I just want sex and that's my intent and my wife doesn't know it. Yeah. And if you think she doesn't, but like, okay. So and it's important to admit that. So you know where your starting point is.
Yes.
And then realize like, you're not meant to just live here.
Yes.
And a lot of men, I would argue, are there after their first conversion. So like, they're faithful guys,
yes.
who love the church, they love their families. They're trying to be good husbands,
yes.
and are still stuck in this.
And are still trying to like rightly order mm-hmm. their desires, their intent and their lived experience mm-hmm. and their biology and all that. Like, they're trying to, and it's like, you're invited to go past the spot where you might get stuck or where you might like, this is how hard I've been working. And I got to this point and that's like good
enough. Right. Right? Like, they're like, well, at least I'm not where I was two years ago, which is true. That's good. But I think that when you, again, like if philosophy, you have a good foundation, you receive the faith without any of the barriers, then it should be able to let you ascend to like, but there's more. Because right. you can reason that there's more, because you shouldn't, like, are you free? And if you're not, because your intentions are wrong, and you know that you're called to more, like, are you free enough to love your wife as you wish you could? If you're not, then this is a place that God needs to redeem, mm-hmm. right? Like, that's something that's specific to you that Jesus needs to heal. And this is where St. John Paul's theology of body comes in, because one big thing that is controversial, well, I don't know how controversial, I don't know what things are controversial with TOB anymore compared to like what was in like the 90s. But I remember hearing that one of the things was that St. John Paul said that you could live out the freedom that you would experience in heaven on earth. Mm-hmm. And that seemed very like, well, that's not impossible. That's, you know, and I think when you read TOB, he has a ton of his metaphysical philosophy his metaphysical theology is based on things that come from Aquinas.
Yeah.
And like this grounded understanding of good philosophy. So like a lot of this won't make sense unless you know that. And that's why I went through the whole thing before, but this is, I don't remember exactly where it was, because it spoke really well to one of the things the guy said to me. So people are going to watch our faces as we scroll. Oh, Monica's going to read this paragraph. You can read that and then we can talk about it.
Okay. So this is paragraph 5. Do you know what day he said? Like,
he said it.
Audience.
This is December 3rd, 1980.
Okay.
And I just
misread. Paragraph 5.
Okay.
All right. Paragraph 5. However, temperance and continence do not mean, if it may be put in this way, suspension in emptiness, neither in the emptiness of values nor in the emptiness of the subject.
Stop. Do you know what he's talking about?
So he's saying that temperance and continence are not just like a black hole of nothingness.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's not like they're missing or lacking. It's like they're inactive.
Mm-hmm. So he's specifically talking about realizing self-mastery through the redemption that Christ has offered us on the cross, right? And up to this point, he's talking about self-mastery and needing mm-hmm. temperance and continence. And he's saying here that it does not mean an emptiness of value. So mm-hmm. meaning that like, and he's talking specifically about sex. So he's talking about the conjugal union. It doesn't mean that like sex needs to be a thing you don't desire anymore because it's mm-hmm. not valuable. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't mean that you have to be empty of these desires. So like that's the emptiness of value and the emptiness of the subject. So like you don't have, and when the gentleman responded to us on our episode, he kind of made it seem like I was like a saint who suddenly like doesn't have these desires.
Yeah.
Like, oh, it must be great. And like, that's not what temperance and continence means mm-hmm. to like, to no longer feel anything anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of men and people who've struggled, and I've talked to who struggled with pornography and masturbation in the past have been like, I just don't want these desires anymore.
Yes.
And like that doesn't happen.
Right.
Where they
and
just
then
go.
And then it's like, working to try to stuff those down mm-hmm. also can be dangerous.
Right. So it's not repression.
Like, those will have that will have consequences too, of trying to like stuff them down, ignore them, pretend mm-hmm. that they don't exist and stuff. Yeah.
Well, and then like, that's more of like a Buddhist, and like, I know Father talked about this tonight at youth group, but like,
yeah,
but like
an emptiness.
Like right. And cause that's more of like an Eastern idea of in their religions of like, they want to release themselves of all desires. So they have no desire.
Yeah.
And like, that's also not, that's not what we're aiming
instead
for.
Instead of so it's a not mastery of desire.
Right. So like, mm-hmm. and that's the big difference. So you can keep going.
Okay. The ethos of redemption is realized in self-mastery by means of temperance, that is, continence of desires. In this behavior, the human heart remains bound to the value from which, through desire, it would otherwise have moved away, turning toward pure lust deprived of ethical value. In the field of the ethos of redemption, union with that value by means of an act of mastery is confirmed or reestablished with an even deeper power and firmness. It is a question here of the value of the nuptial meaning of the body, of the value of a transparent sign. By means of this, the Creator, together with the perennial mutual attraction of man and woman through masculinity and femininity, has written in the heart of them both the gift of communion, that is, the mysterious reality of his image and likeness. It is a question of the value in the act of self-mastery and temperance to which Christ referred in the Sermon on the Mount.
So, and the sermon he's talking about is the one where if a man looks at a woman with lust, he's already committed adultery with her in his heart. Mm-hmm. And here's just, he's expressing that how self-mastery and redemption are so intertwined. And he talks about like the ethos of the redemption in self-mastery is realized by the means of temperance, and that is continence of desires. So like being able to, for your desires to be, the word control may seem wrong because it sounds like repression, but be governed, like your mm-hmm. desires being governed by temperance, by a virtue, so that your human heart doesn't lose the recognition of the value of sex, mm-hmm. right? So you're not losing it as like, so you go to that man whose intent is to have sex with his wife, and you want like the redemption for him would be able to say, I want to have sex with my wife because I want to be with my wife. Right. So like, mm-hmm. and then recognize that like, okay, I want to be with her, and there's ways of going about this that are correct and ways of going about this that are wrong. So like, you're not trying to kill the desire in him, for him to remember what the true value of what you're desiring to right. do is.
Right. And what is that, like, what does that physical desire point to? Mm-hmm. Right. And then to rightly order that. I used to hate the word disorder, and now I've really come to love it. Like, to the disorder of our desires and then rightly ordering them and putting them in their proper place. Mm-hmm. And that comes through, I think there's another important part too, where it's like, there's some level of shame when you feel like, I have been trying so hard to rightly order my desires. I've been practicing, I put apps on my phone to block certain things on my phone. I have these desires, and instead I go and I exercise, or I take a cold shower, or I, you know, think like, I've been working so hard to do the right thing that we also, or I've been praying and asking God to take this desire away from me. I do mm-hmm. holy hours. I pray this many rosaries, and there's still some sort of disconnect between the spiritual and the human lived experience, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's a both and it's an we're invited to this process, but there's also the power that grace has in our life, the power of Jesus' redemption, the power, like, he is inviting us to freedom, and we're allowed and invited to cooperate with that. So mm-hmm. it's a both and. It's our practices and our rightly ordering our behavior, but it's also this surrender to the Lord's will, and then it's an acceptance of grace mm-hmm. in that. And it's like, it's all of this that we're invited to. So if we keep isolating them, then yes, like, that idea of total freedom seems Mm-hmm. Impossible. Like, I'm just trying to get it. I'm just trying to get better at it.
See, and I think you push back on me if I'm wrong, but I feel like a lot of things you mentioned seem to me to be very void of any intellectual work, right? It seems very like, I want to give this away to God. So they, cause we've done this in prayer too. When we were with the teens, like give it over to God and like, let it be his and just like surrender, give full control.
Lay it at the foot of the cross.
Right. Which is a good thing that you ought to do. Mm-hmm. But like, and so like, that's where you're, cause we're intellect and will is what the powers of like our soul that make us distinct from like the animals. We have an intellect and we have will. So like our ability to, we want to give, like our will is, desires his will. But unfortunately, I think a lot of times like our intellect doesn't know how to think about these things. Mm-hmm. So like, so you put the apps on your phone and you're praying all the rosaries, you're doing all of the things. And then when the desire still comes, the temptation still comes and you immediately see like, and I know this from experience, but also from like being with, walking with other young men and women, like you get the desire and you feel like, oh, here it comes. This is it. I thought I wasn't gonna go through this again.
And I then thought you start, I mastered it.
Right. And then you start spiraling instead of like, and this is where like you start feeling like it's a battle of the will immediately, when instead of like, let me take a step back and think about what's happening. I'm having a response. Like I'm being triggered by blank. I'm being triggered sexually. And this is where St. John Paul says, like, this is where the creator's written in the mutual attraction of men and women through masculinity and femininity, and written in their hearts the gift of communion. And I know Christopher Russ has said this too. Like, when you experience that lust, if you're able to just for a second reason through it and be like, okay, this desire that I have for my wife, I'm going back to the guy on this work trip. Work trip. Whatever. Like I'm going back to that guy and he's thinking like, I want to have sex with my wife. If he could reason through that and be like, your desire is for communion with her because you miss her.
Yeah.
And because you're lonely and because you would much rather be with your family right now than trying to get work. And you might be, you know, let down, the interviews aren't going as you're supposed to, you're maybe a little sad. Like if you can reason through that, that reframes your sexual desires.
Yes.
And so like, and that's where, and I would argue, and I could be wrong.
I'm no longer consumed by the sexual desire because I realize also that that is pointing to relational desire and loneliness or stress.
Things that are good.
And like, yes.
Yes.
It could be negative too. And that like, I desire that comfort that home brings, that my wife brings, like, because I'm having negative experience, like whatever case may be. Then you don't feel like it's one-on-one. Like I'm just, it's me versus lust right now. Like it's not right.
Right. So like if you can allow your intellect to remind you of the value of your sexual desires, because immediately what happens is like you get them and you start fighting them because like, these are bad, these are bad, these are bad. And like you lose the value of them. So then you either want to repress them or you want to be empty of them.
Yeah.
And like I think that if you could use your intellect to like remember the value of these things, because then he ends this part with like, it is a question of this value in the act of self-mastery and temperance, to which Christ referred in the Sermon on the Mount. Like if you could remember these values, if you remember the value in the goodness of sex and the goodness of your desire and what it's calling you to, that could lead to self-mastery, because like then now you master the desires as they come in. Mm-hmm. Like they don't control you anymore. Like the desires still come. Like I know it wasn't his intent, but the listener kind of made it seem like, again, I'm walking on water because like I'm not constantly being drawn by the desires, but like it doesn't mean I don't experience them. I may even experience them in the same amount that he does, mm-hmm. but like they are framed very differently. They're not mm-hmm. a source of tension, but they're a reminder of my call to holiness. Mm-hmm. Right. And then that's kind of what St. John Paul talks about in the next, line on paragraph 6 in the same, talk.
This act may give the impression of suspension in the emptiness of the subject.
Why?
It may give this impression especially when it is necessary to make up one's mind to carry it out for the first time, or even more when the opposite habit has been formed, when man is accustomed to yield to the lust of the flesh.
And so like this idea that, so like looking from the outside, it can give the impression. So like if somebody is able to reframe their sexual thoughts and they're able to remind themselves of sexual value, and then they're no longer controlled by them, it gives the impression that the person is in emptiness and just mm-hmm. is empty of those thoughts. Like they just don't experience them. which is what he said of me, like, oh, he just might not experience them. And like, no, that's not true. Like, your calling is to be able to master these things.
Right.
But the way that you master them is not through repression, and it is not through emptiness, mm-hmm. but through redemption. Like, there's a very difference in it. And especially if you're just starting to do this, it will be extremely hard because you're so used to either constantly fighting the sexual desire or giving in to the point that it's a habit.
Yep.
So like, this desire comes and I give in. This is what I do. Then we have a sandwich after. Like, it's just a thing that is a cycle. Sorry. But it's a cycle that you now have to break. Yeah. And it's not broken through emptiness, and it's not broken through repression.
Yeah.
It's broken through self-mastery.
Yeah. I keep thinking too. I
keep talking. I'm gonna try to plug this in.
Yeah. I'm sorry if this like derails the conversation a little bit, but I keep thinking too about our priests though. And sisters, right? They are also not void of these feelings, right? They don't not experience them because they've been called to a different vocation. And yet they don't have a quote unquote outlet for them, right? So I think that's, I don't know. I've just been thinking about that.
Well, I'm waiting for that to start up. No, but I think people don't realize that.
Yeah.
Like, that's why a lot of them will say like, oh, priests should just get married.
Yes.
Right? Like, they should just get married because like they need an outlet.
Yes.
Because they feel like, again, they think the only solution is you repress or you're empty.
Yes.
Right? And like, if the priest can't repress it, so then he needs an outlet.
Yes.
So give him a wife. Like, that's not how that works.
Right.
And again, but that's, again, that starts in my mind, that starts from poor philosophy. Because you don't realize what you're actually being called. You don't realize what's right or wrong. And then you don't realize what you're being called to. So like, having a wife as an outlet for sex is objectively evil.
Right.
So like,
because you're using your wife as an outlet for your desires.
Right. So like, oh, like the priests need that. And like, they don't, they need self-mastery. And like, and this is what we're called to through the redemption. Like, it's possible. Like, Christ is allowed. It's so hard to be good, especially when you try being good, you realize how hard it is. And that's why you need grace. And he's given that ability for us to reach him. Well, he's actually, you know, he's come down and reached for us through the cross, through the redemption. And mm-hmm. now we have the ability to live
right
as we're supposed to live.
And this is where too, that like this, well, I'm thinking particularly about masculinity, but even for women, that this is not easy for women either. This we're just kind of responding to the Catholic gentleman. So it was about men mostly, but that like this, like when met with hard things and you're like, okay, I see the hard thing, I'm going to try the hard thing. And then when we meet with resistance to the hard thing, or we don't perfect it right away, or, you know, like I thought since I figured this all out and I get it now, shouldn't that just solve everything? Right. Like that there's, then we either try to rationalize that like, well, this little bit of struggle is okay because I overcame so much, or we run away from the hard stuff because it's hard and we're not always good at it. Mm-hmm. And that part of our culture, that part of ourselves, like that part of our humanity is what needs to continually be worked on and perfected mm-hmm. in our lifetime.
And the analogy St. John Paul uses for that here, because again, like, because redemption is such a tricky thing to explain without giving concrete examples. And I like your example, but even then, like we'd have to speak directly to their struggle. And I think like you didn't go to healing the whole person. But you went to the
undone.
You went to undone. I feel like when they went through the like feminine identities.
Yeah.
Like I think that kind of stuff is good to unravel like your particular thing where you need healing.
Yes.
Because when you do
the root of your wound.
Right. Cause then you're able to like you get through layers of a person and like the different layers and you get to the root, and then from there you can start building. And he uses that the analogy of layers here. And I'd like you to read from here. This is after the saying that when, you know, people experiencing freedom and the emptiness of the subject.
However, even the first time, and all the more so if he then acquires the capacity, man already gradually experiences his own dignity. Mm. But
so for the people who think that this is impossible, this freedom is not real, St. John Paul would argue that like when you start realizing your capacity for freedom through the redemption, you experience your own dignity, you experience your own value, mm-hmm. you experience what you're mm-hmm. capable of, what you're possible, what you're able to do through the cross.
Yeah.
And like, this is what you're called to as a son.
You're called up.
Yep. Right.
By means of temperance, he bears witness to his own self-mastery and shows that he is carrying out what is essentially personal in him. Furthermore, he gradually experiences the freedom of the gift, which in one way is the condition and in another way is the response of the subject to the nuptial value of the human body.
The response to the value of the human body. It's like when you get that sexual desire, you remember the value of what you're being given. And sorry, I just think that's so important. Yeah. Sorry, keep going.
No, it just says in its femininity and masculinity.
Keep going.
In this way, the ethos of the redemption of the body is realized through self-mastery, through the temperance of desires. This happens when the human heart enters an alliance with this ethos, or rather confirms it by means of its own integral subjectivity, when the deepest and yet most real possibilities and dispositions of the person are manifested, when the innermost layers of his potentiality acquire a voice, layers which the lust of the flesh would not permit to show themselves.
I love that line.
Mm-hmm.
But like, and this is again where people can think, I know philosophy is not sexy, but like it can lead to this because again, like you're able, you need to be able to reason through this and reason to what thoughts are yours, what thoughts are of the Lord, what thoughts are of the evil one. Like you have to be like, you don't suspend your being, like you don't stop thinking just because you're in prayer. Mm-hmm. Like there's part of you that's still there. Because that's what makes us distinctly different from Eastern prayer. Mm-hmm. Like Eastern prayer, like they are joining the great nothingness, whereas we are in relationship with God.
Mm-hmm.
That our hearts enter in alliance with the ethos of the redemption, and then like our integral subjectivity. So like what we experience, what mm-hmm. we subjectively experience, becomes part of the conversation. So again, mm-hmm. like our individual wounds, again. Every man who may be experiencing the loss that we were talking about, like, or every wife whose husband experiences that, or even wives who experience that, like we all have an integral subjectivity that our hearts need to come into alliance with the redemption so that we could then start unraveling these things.
Mm.
And as we unravel, then like the layers of potentiality acquire a voice, which
yeah.
again, like what you could be, what Christ is calling to
yeah.
you starts being able to poke its head out because right now you feel like the best you could be, like you said earlier, like this is the best I got.
Yeah.
And like, no, when you start taking those layers of lust out, you realize like there's so much more, like there's so much more potential
yeah.
that you're being called to.
Yeah. And your subjectivity is not suspended. Like you
mm-hmm.
are a part of that. Like the you that God created, that individual that was made at this time for this reason in this space with these people with this in this marriage, and like that is not removed. Like it's not this it's not just like a situation, like it's a relationship of persons
mm-hmm.
and you, your spouse, and the Lord are all still like uniquely connected in that
mm-hmm.
And like you're not lost in that. You're actually like brought out more. Like the your you-ness is now free to be exposed, mm-hmm. to be living, and it's no longer overshadowed and hidden by lust or disordered sexual desire for your spouse.
Mm-hmm. And like that's where you, when you get to that point, you could say you've acquired the virtue of chastity in your marriage. Like when that temperance, the ethos and self-mastery, the ethos of the redemption and the temperance is in the sexual realm, then you have chastity. When you have it in other areas of like same with food and drink, with all the other things that you can be temperate for,
yes,
or must be temperate to with, then mm-hmm. you have temperance. And like that's that's part of what we're called to do is, yes. as Catholics, is strive for those virtues. And when we do, when we see that we're falling short, we need to take ourselves, bring ourselves to the cross, and allow the redemption to start working in our lives. And unpack these layers. Why'd this turn off again? Because it's time to go. That's why.
Bedtime.
So
it's all right.
But so I hope this all made sense. And I think that the calling for all husbands and wives that the church puts on them of chastity and living out these marriages and redeeming our sexual desires, not repressing them or emptying ourselves of them, but redeeming them, is very possible. It's not something that just I've been able to do, which I hate saying it this way. It's just because I was called out this way. But like, it's possible for everyone. And like, that's what theology of body is about.
Yeah.
Theology of body is not a new sex teaching.
And I don't want to like not speak to this truth, because like I want to call up all of the marriages, yes. and the relationships that are listening, that like you have like, again, it's like that desire is aligned with the ethos, right? Like this desire for like a very good marriage, like that's also been put on your heart, and like that can be realized, mm-hmm. that can be actualized, that potentiality exists. So like, don't think of it as something like, oh, there's just no way that that's possible. Like, no, I want to speak to that and say, like, I don't want to shy away from what we were saying. Maybe hopefully this is put more delicately or encouragingly than our last episode or what have you, but that I don't want to not say it though, because it could hurt somebody's feelings, but also like that's not the intent. And mm-hmm. the point is to call you
not
up.
Objectively evil to it's hurt not, people's feelings.
Okay. So like that you and your marriages, like that's what Christ wants for you. So mm-hmm. I want to say that so that you can hear that Christ wants that for your marriages, and he wants that for your relationships. He wants that for you. And that it is possible. It's not just this like desire that you're always going to be working towards and never going to reach.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the Catechism says that chastity, I'll read it and I'll end it with this, because I think this is important. Because like, I don't want to say this is like this will fix everything. Well, and I say that as I don't have the Catechism up, but like, I don't want to say like this is possible and then it be like, well, it's going to take forever. Like, it's possible and it's not easy and it takes work. But I've always found hope in this, just this line that chastity includes an apprenticeship in self-mastery, which is a training in human freedom. And I think that's important to remember. Actually, no, that quote and the one that's two paragraphs after. Self-mastery is a long and exacting work. One can never consider it acquired once and for all. It presupposes renewed effort at all stages of life. The effort required can be more intense in certain periods, such as when personality is being formed during childhood and adolescence. Chastity has laws of growth which progress through stages marked by imperfection and too often by sin. Man day by day builds himself up through his many free decisions, and so he knows, loves, and accomplishes moral good by stages of growth. So like, the Catechism does help with that, of like, this is a process, but redemption is possible. So thank you for joining episode 101 of the To Become Family. We're not the To Become Family podcast. We're just To Become Family podcast.
A podcast.
Do we just say To Become Family? What do we use? Pre-canon with the Pope. We didn't call the pre-canon with the Pope podcast.
Okay.
So Episode 101 of To Become Family. That sounds better. Thank you for being here, and we will see you on YouTube. Go ahead and subscribe to our YouTube. If you're here from YouTube, leave a comment, like, subscribe. If you're not and you're here on listening to just audio, subscribe and leave 5 stars.
And on Apple, write a review.
Yep. And we'll see you at the next episode.